ย
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Okay, second, 10th canto, chapter 3, verse number 20. Sa Tvam Trilokasthitaye Swamayaya Vibharshi Shuklam Kalu Varnam Atmana Sargaya Raktam Rajaso Pragrimitam Krishnam cha varnam tamasa janatyaya swatam trilokasthitaye swamayaya vibhashi shuklam kalu varnam atmana Sargaya raktam rajaso papi brimitam Krishnam chavarnam tamasa janatyaye Swatvam trilokasthitaye swamayaya Vibharshi shuklam kalu varnam atmana Sargaya raktam rajaso pabrimitam Krishnam chavarnam tamasa janatyaye Swatvam, your lordship, who are the same person, the transcendence. Trilokasthitaye, to maintain the three worlds, upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. Swamayaya, by your personal energy, Atmamayaya Vibharshi Asum Shuklam the white form of Vishnu in goodness Kalu as well as Varnam color Atmana of the same category as you Vishnu Tattva Sargaya, for the creation of the entire world. Raktam, the reddish color of Rajoguna. Rajasa, with the quality of passion. Upabrimitam, being charged. Krishnam cha, and the quality of darkness. Varnam, the color. Tamasa, which is surrounded by ignorance. Jana atyaye, for the ultimate destruction of the entire creation. Translation. My Lord, your form is transcendental to the three material modes. Yet for the maintenance of the three worlds, you assume the white color of Vishnu and goodness. For creation, which is surrounded by the quality of passion, you appear reddish. And at the end, when there is a need of annihilation, which is surrounded by ignorance, you appear blackish. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Vasudeva prayed to the Lord, "You are called Shuklam. Shuklam, or whiteness, is the symbolic representation of the absolute truth because it is unaffected by the material qualities. Lord Brahma is called Rakta, or red, because Brahma represents the qualities of passion for creation. Darkness is entrusted to Lord Shiva because he annihilates the universe, the cosmos. The creation, annihilation, and maintenance of this cosmic manifestation are conducted by your potencies, yet you are always unaffected by those qualities. As confirmed in the Vedas, Adir Hi Nirguna Sakshat, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always free from all material qualities. It is also said that the qualities of passion and ignorance are non-existent in the person of the Supreme Lord." In this verse, the three colors mentioned, Shukla, Rakta, and Krishna, are not to be understood literally in terms of what we experience with our senses, but rather as representatives of Sattvagun, Rajagun, and Tamagun. After all, sometimes we see that a duck is white, although it is in Tamagun. The mode of ignorance, illustrating the logic called Bhakanda Nyaya, the duck is such a fool that it runs after the testicles of a bull, thinking them to be hanging fish that can be taken when it drops. Thus the duck is always in darkness. Vasudeva, however, the compiler of the Vedic literature, is blackish. But this does not mean that he is in Tamagun. Rather, he is in the highest position of Sattvagun, beyond the material modes of nature. Sometimes these colors, Shukla, Rakta, Tatapita, are used to designate the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Lord Chirodakashai Vishnu is celebrated as possessing a blackish color. Lord Shiva is whitish, and Lord Brahma is reddish. But according to Srila Sanatana Goswami in the Vaishnav Toshanitika, this exhibition of colors is not what is referred to here. The real understanding of Shukla, Rakta, and Krishna is as follows. The Lord is always transcendental, but for the sake of creation, he assumes color. Rakta is Lord Brahma. Again, sometimes the Lord becomes angry. He says in Bhagavad Gita 16:19, Tanaham dvishatakruran tam sareshu naradamam chipamyajashram ashubam asurishveva yonishu. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. To destroy the demons, the Lord becomes angry, therefore he assumes the form of Lord Shiva. In summary, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always beyond the material qualities, and we should not be misled into thinking otherwise simply because of sense perception. One must understand the position of the Lord through the authorities or the Mahajanas, as stated in the Bhagavatam 1.3.28, Ake Chamsa Pala Pumsan, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Indrani Vyakulam Lokam Mridayanti Yuge Yuge. All of the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. But Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. All of them appear on planets whenever there is a disturbance created by the atheists. The Lord incarnates to protect the theists. Om Agana Timirandasya Ganandana Shalakaya Chaksuramilitanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sajajatam Sagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Savetam Savarutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namani Gora Tushe Namaha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So thank you for giving me a chance to speak about Krishna. We can't speak without an audience, right? I guess Prabhupada said if there's no one around you can preach to yourself. The audience helps, especially if there's, you know, enthusiasm for hearing. That's what Krishna is pleased with. So here we have some interesting explanations about the references to color. In this modern age, a skin disease is a very, Prabhupada called a skin disease, judging by the body. All white people are like this, black people are like that. You know, yellow people, they label everybody. I've never seen a yellow Chinese, but they call them yellow. They're quite white usually, unless they get out in the sun. So it refers to the consciousness here. We had it in Africa before they started getting a little careful about who lived in the ashram. There was a lot of thieving. And when they went to the police, the policeman said, "Why do you let all these black people stay in your ashram?" But according to us, you know, they're all black. But according to them, they're judging by the qualities. They call the black ones, or the, you know, the low class thieves, dishonest. So the same thing is there. Although generally, I guess in previous ages, the brahmanas were quite light color, and the kshatriyas were mixed up. Vaishyas were a little more dark, and the sudras were darker. But then Krishna is blackish color, and Arjuna, and Draupadi. So there's no hard and fast rules. Although Krishna's color is not exactly black either, but they say black. So sham, which is like a, it's more like gray, but bluish gray, and it's not exactly a color like we're used to. But here, anyway, that, you know, Krishna is getting glorified. This is by Vasudeva, right after his birth. It's another example of the buck. Buck is those crane, you know, what are they? Those birds with the long neck that stand in the water like yogis. They're white, they're standing on one leg, very patiently like a yogi meditating, but they're just waiting for a fish to come by, and then they stab the fish with their sharp beak and eat it. So they look white and nice, but they're actually in the tamagun. Bakasura was a gigantic form like that. Tried to jab Krishna with his beak. So just to mention, today is the Ekadasi, and it's the anniversary of Srila Prabhupada's completion of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I'm going to speak this afternoon, and we'll speak on that subject. It's a wonderful subject. Prabhupada dropped everything to finish translating Chaitanya Charitamrita so it could be published. But we'll discuss the whole thing, a lot to it. So Krishna's birth is, you know, most auspicious for the world. When it's saying he takes these different forms, but it's not exactly like Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Mahadev, that is exactly the same. Krishna is the origin. These are incarnations or portions of plenary portions, like this verse, Ete Chamsa Kalapumsa. Krishna's two, Bhagavan Swayam. And we have Brahma Samhita, Ramadi Murti Shukalani Amena Tishtan Nanavatara Makarod Bhuvaneshu Krishna. Krishna Swayam, right? Krishna's original. There's so many incarnations, Nanavataram, but Krishna's the original. Krishna's the source of all of them. And this verse from the first canto coming up in a few more verses. Ete Chamsa Kala Pumsan. Krishna's too Bhagavan Swayam. That there's so many portions and plenary portions of Krishna. I'll just back. And whenever there's enemies of Indra, which are the demons, the atheists, the asuras, then Krishna comes. In many different incarnations, unlimited, in all different species even. It's very hard to understand. We can understand the avatars, the Das Avatar, Kurma, and, you know, Matsya, Varaha, right? In the form of different animals. But in all species, it says, somehow Krishna comes. But Krishna is the original. He doesn't change. He's always the supreme cowherd boy, you know, living in Gokula, Goloka, and Gokula. He's the same person playing his flute, you know, just enjoying loving exchanges. But the incarnations are also Krishna. So the Mayavadis want to merge everything. Everything is the same, everything Krishna, or it is not really Krishna, it's just imaginary. So many demoniac things they can say. The academics, they might know the Bhagavatam backward and forward and upside down and inside out by heart, but they don't believe in anything in it. They just say, yeah, that this is what they say. I met one very friendly professor once. It was Christmas Eve in London, so he was rushing like everyone else, you know, to do their shopping. And I said, come on, slow down a minute, you know, it's time to get some religion in your life, you know. So he stopped and he said, yeah, well, I thought about that when I was young, you know. But then now he's a philosophy professor at London School of Economics. He was at Oxford. And so we discussed, you know, and everything. I told him what we really believe, you know, how we came from the spiritual world, and we wanted. Oh, he said, oh yeah, that's what the Christian, you know, he knew what everybody believes in, but he didn't believe in anything. That's how the academics are. Everything is just somebody's idea, you know. At least he understood that atheism was not a. He had worked with this most famous atheist, not with him, but in the same university, in Oxford that Dawkins, so he's always promoting his, he said he's the most religious fanatic person in the world. He never stops promoting his idea of religion, that there's no God, and that the idea that having religion is the worst thing that could have, that ever happened to the world, and all trouble in the world is because of religion, because of that. So he could understand that, but anyway, they know everything, but they don't believe anything. Devotees are different. They believe it. We may not know very much, but we believe what we know. We believe that Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. We believe he lifted Govardhan Hill. We believe he broke the two Arjuna trees, you know, which is, even the coward men couldn't believe it, you know. But they were in Yoga Maya. The others that don't believe it are in Mahamaya, and they're in love with Krishna, and they really think he's a small boy, and you know they have to take care of him, and Krishna is also believing that in his inconceivable potencies. But after that breaking of the trees, then they started thinking back, you know, of all the things, and then they started thinking, wait a minute, you know, this is too much, you know, all these things that are happening around Krishna. So they didn't, I don't know if they were discussing with Nanda Maharaj, you know, your son is something special. He might be some big yogi, he might be a demigod. I don't think they came up with the Supreme Lord, but Nanda Maharaj said, he's my son, and I have to chastise him, I have to teach him. But wonderful Krishna, you know, they started remembering, yeah, well, maybe he did break those trees because he killed Putana and he killed Trinavarta and he, you know, I don't know how many others before that, a few, right? He was still very young at this time. And so they were under, you know, occasionally they would get these glimpses of Krishna. For us, by understanding Krishna's inconceivable potencies and worshiping Krishna in awe and reverence and performing, you know, regulated sadhana, we will come to this platform. We can't imitate it. We can't jump to be a spontaneous, you know, lover of Krishna. But it will come by the mercy of Guru and Gauranga, by practice, by practicing, you know, Vaidhi Bhakti, Sadhana Bhakti. It's not an inferior thing. Even Raghunath Das Goswami, for instance, he practiced much more strictly than we do. Right? We can't possibly imitate to chant 128 rounds a day or whatever, pay obeisances to 2,000 Vaishnavas, recite the Chaitanya Leela 3 hours a day, you know, and whatever, and write books and all the things that he did. But he did that very strictly. He said that it was like lines on a stone, you know, they don't come off. If you etched into a stone, then they won't come out. But we want to be steady in our sadhana bhakti that's given to us by Srila Prabhupada and handed down. We don't change and adjust. We can do more, but we have to balance everything. So these incarnations of Krishna, Jiva Goswami, and I think it's the Krishna Sandarbha, because even in the Bhagavatam, there are slokas that, reading them independently, we could easily think that Vishnu is the original. Or even Shiva, the prayers that are offered. And Shiva is prayed to like that by devotees. Bhagavan. So he goes through all that, and his conclusion is that someone might know the Sanskrit word, but there's one sloka in the Bhagavatam upon which we have to base every understanding of the Bhagavatam that we have, every interpretation or of whatever else we read, and that's this one, Ete Chamsa Kalapungsam Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. That Krishna is the original. Whatever else we think, we have to always come back to this. This is the pin, the key pin, the linchpin, or whatever they call it in English, that everything else is understood by. And Lord Brahma says the same thing. Ramadi Murtishu Kala Niyamena Tishtan Nanavataram Akarod Bhuvaneshu Kintu Krishna Swayam Samavabak Paramak Pumanyo Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. There are many, many Bhagavan. Even great devotees can be called Bhagavan. But Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. He's the original. And he has qualities that are beyond any other one. You know, Brahma has 78% or something, Shiva has something, and the incarnations up may have 94%. But then Krishna has qualities that no one else has. And that's what, you know, we're dealing with here, like with this Damodar month. Loving exchanges with his devotees and his flute playing. All the incarnations of Krishna are extraordinarily beautiful, but Krishna is much more beautiful than any of them. If you put Krishna next to them, inconceivable. And the beauty of Krishna is the most wonderful of all his qualities, of all the opulences of Krishna, the six Sadashwarya, six opulences. The beauty is most wonderful, which justifies or rectifies or helps us, you know, it eclipses all the others. It is the most wonderful thing. And nobody can argue that Krishna is not beautiful. Any picture of Krishna is beautiful, right? Any deity of Krishna is beautiful. Prabhupada would say many times, different deities, this is the most beautiful. Because Krishna is always the most beautiful, wherever he is. But so we have descriptions in Bhagavatam of Krishna's beauty, you know, how he's dressed, how he stands, and everything about him, his hair. So this Damodar, you know, his face has got all these curly hairs around it, and they're bouncing off his face when he's crying, and his eyes are reddish. His neck has three lines like a conch shell, very, very white, and like, it's not white, it's dark color. And he charmed everybody from the time he was born, first appeared. Anyone who saw him would be attracted. He's so beautiful that even the Lord Ramachandra was even so beautiful. Sages, they wanted to have intimate, you know, rasa with him, so they were able to take birth as gopis in the next life, have some connection with Krishna. And Radharani is even more beautiful. So Lord Chaitanya is even more beautiful because he's a combination of Radha and Krishna. And Prabhupada, when he was describing the Mohini incarnation, he said, Krishna is the most beautiful. He's the most beautiful. They said the woman in human body is more beautiful. So when Krishna becomes a woman, then even more beautiful. He became very excited about that. So the inconceivable potencies of Krishna. We cannot understand Krishna unless we accept the inconceivable potencies. The materialists, the academics, hard scientists, whatever they are, they want conceivable explanations of God. So they can never understand Krishna. I heard Indradyumna Maharaj speaking on Radhastami. He'd been on an airplane and he was next to some professor of Indology. And he was saying how the guy was so learned, you know. And he knew so many things, and he kept explaining according to, you know, Arsiddhanta. He knew the Bhagavatam, and he was wondering why we worship Radharani, because she's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam. He was trying to explain all the things, that he just couldn't get it. And then he just told him, he said, you don't have any devotion, so you can't understand this. They'll say, well, you're devoted, so therefore you're an illusion, and you just accept all this stuff. But that's Krishna. He reveals himself when he wants to. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrita mudo yam navijananti loko yam ajam avyayam. And I'm not revealed to the foolish and unintelligent. Naham prakasha sarvasya. I'm covered by my yoga maya. Yoga maya, Mahamaya is subordinate to yoga maya, so he says yoga maya. They're bewildered. All they can see is maya. It's like if you go to the theater or come here for darshan and the curtain never opens or something. You'll never see Krishna. So some people, that they actually see Krishna, they see the deity, they see the Bhagavatam, they read it, but they don't see Krishna. He only reveals himself to devotees. And even the simplest person with absolutely, practically no knowledge, if they have faith and some devotion, Krishna can reveal himself. He can take them back to Godhead. But a faithless person, no matter how much he knows, no matter how many rituals he does, you know, no matter how many candles. So we have to be careful also, because we've seen the history of all religions. Sometimes they get caught up in the rituals and they forget the essence. Rituals are important. It helps us to regulate our life, control our mind, you know, give us something to do with our bodies. But we have to know why we're doing it. So we have to hear about Krishna. You know, that means reading, particularly Srila Prabhupada's books, which he, you know, worked so inconceivably hard to produce, you know, every night, translating for many hours, no matter what. I mean, all of us, when we travel, like, you know, for a couple of days, we can hardly walk or talk. But he traveled really far sometimes, and he just never missed a beat. He just set his watch to the place where he was, and lived the exact same life as he did in the previous place. And he chanted. Sometimes he didn't sleep. He would just translate all night. Usually he took rest. Devotees are with him said they don't think he was sleeping, you know, by our experience of sleep. But he was inactive and resting. And he would wake up and sometimes immediately just pick up where he left off in the middle of a sentence 2 hours before. And then he would translate for a few hours, at least, because he wanted these books, he wanted us to have them, he wanted us to read them. Not only distribute, but to read. But not only to read, but to distribute. Balance life, just like everything else. So, sometimes people ask us, why only Krishna? Why you chant Krishna, Krishna? Why you're worshiping Krishna only? Sometimes we have Ramachandra deities like in Juhu. We have Gornitai. But otherwise, Krishna. We're chanting Krishna, and even Rama is the name of Krishna. You know. So what about all the others? Of course, mostly when they say that, they mean all the devas. So now it's become fashionable in the West, so-called bhakti festivals, and so-called kirtan. But they're chanting all the different demigods. They chant Hare Krishna also. I was thinking about that. Like the Mayavadi gurus, they tell their disciples, chant Hare Krishna. Yeah, oh yeah, we chant Hare Krishna. Because they've heard I know this happened long ago when Prabhupada was still present. They never chanted the Maha Mantra. But after devotees made the Maha Mantra so famous, and it was so clear that it is the Maha Mantra, and disciples of these Mayavadi gurus would ask him, "Oh yes, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, we are chanting also." So they include that in their bhajans. But along with anything and everything else. There was one, a really famous one, and they just twisted the Maha Mantra almost the same, but not quite. But if you go to their program, in 5 minutes, but they chant everything. And even for their guru, also Bhagavan. So, and we have to really work it out, get moving to let people experience the kirtan, the real kirtan of the devotees of Krishna. You know, those who are really bhakta. Bhakti is only for Krishna, it's not for anyone else. But they're saying bhakti for Shiva, bhakti for everybody, especially Shiva and Ganesh, because they want to enjoy. And their festivals are all kinds of enjoyment, but they call it bhakti festival. And where did they learn that word, people in America? Where did they learn about the word kirtan even? But they don't ever give credit. Sometimes they like to have devotees join them, because then they can say, just see, you know. They approve of us. This is all one. We chant Hare Krishna. That way they lure new people that heard from, they met devotees, they heard Hare Krishna is the Maha Mantra. Oh, these people are also chanting. They're also talking about Krishna. So we have to be out and about anywhere in India. Of course, the Mayavadis have always been there. And let people, you know, get the real Bhagavad Gita as it is. Things have changed quite a bit in India, not only materially. When I came to India the first time, I was only in 1975, but then 78 I was living in Bombay. And the temple, I think they only had one car, Prabhupada's old car. There were only ambassador cars, a few imported cars, not very many. And Padminis. Many things. And there were no Indian devotees, practically. In Juhu there was Haridas and another Purna Brahma and Prasanatma. I think that was a couple of Matajis. That was all. The American Embassy would come every month to check everybody's visas. Because it's all foreign. It's considered a foreign religion. And even by Indian, they're considering Hare Krishna foreign religions. In Vrindavan, they still say the Angresa Mandir. You know. I always tell the rickshaw guys the Angresa Mandir. You know. The Indians will say, how can you call it that? You know. And now there's no Angresa there anymore now. In Juhu, there's only Bhima. Right? So things have changed. Now there's every kind of car. And in those days, the devotees in India told Prabhupada it is impossible to distribute books in India. Everybody already has Bhagavad Gita. And that's true, they all say that. You know. We have in our home, they have books called Bhagavad something. Many times it's not even Bhagavad Gita, but they think it is. But devotees persevered and, you know, showing everybody that this Bhagavad Gita is different. You know, it has all the slokas, has all the Sanskrit, word for word, has the purports. And gradually people, you know, who read it, understood. And the devotees became so everywhere, constantly showing people the Bhagavad Gita that now it's, we can't keep up, right? How many are selling? People buying, you know, thousands at a time. Times have changed. But still, people need to meet devotees one-on-one. Devotees need to know the book so we can teach it. We can answer questions from people because, you know, they're bewildered. They've heard Mayavadi. It's still going on. The Mayavadis haven't stopped. They've made more of their Bhagavad Gitas also. They're having more and more big programs. If you go to Vrindavan and you do the Vrindavan Parikrama, just like there's so many signboards here advertising so many things, there's so, like that, you can't even see Vrindavan advertising this Bhagwat, this one, this Saptaha, this one, you know, I can't remember the names they use, but young and old, 10 years old, 100 years old, giving their Bhagwat, and the stages are set up all around. So they don't take rest. Many of my buddies have their headquarters in Vrindavan because it's become very popular because of Krishna and Balaram. Vrindavan, it wasn't a popular place before. You know, people went there on Julan Yatra and, you know, Janmashtami. But it wasn't like people from all over the world, even from Delhi, even from all over India, wanting to go to Vrindavan all the time. But now they're building their house in Vrindavan. You know, they're going there. Everybody wants to visit Vrindavan because ISKCON made it famous. Now Mayapur is starting to become famous, but not, it hasn't caught up to Vrindavan yet. But we want it to. Now that the temple's coming up, it will, when that temple is built. We heard a few quotes from Prabhupada, you know, people are going to come from everywhere. So we have a great legacy with Prabhupada, you know, what he did to get the land in Juhu. I'm sure everybody's read the story and heard it, but, you know, it's just an amazing thing. That land was really not even a jungle, just a scrap heap kind of thing. Prabhupada saw it and thought that'll make a good temple. That was before he ever went to America. And then, you know, with all the cheating that was going on and devotees were handling it, the lawyer told him, you'll never get it. And even if you do, no one is ever going to come there if you make a temple there. It's a really ridiculous idea. And devotees, you know, would question Prabhupada, why do we want a temple there? We're happy here in Akashganga, you know. Everybody lives here. But Prabhupada had his vision, and the devotees actually signed away the land. You know, Prabhupada got it back. And so many things he accomplished, he had to go through. But now we see the result. And building that temple in Juhu, and it was, at that time, all the money came from overseas, practically. At the time of the opening, there was 1,000 life members who had paid 1,100 rupees. So you don't build temples for that, you know, right? 1 lakh, right? It was built for 3 crores or something, you know, $3 million. This all came from book distribution, practically, in Europe and America. But then in 1 year, I was there that year, the number of life members doubled. People were just coming to see it. And then all over the world, preaching to the Indian population became viable because, oh yeah, you have that place in Juhu. So you're bona fide, you're real. Otherwise they didn't really wonder, you know, what are these crazy, you know, Americans dressing up like Vaishnavas. And devotees were in the ashram, at least in L.A. when I spent some time there. At night, everybody threw their clothes in a chute. In the morning, you just lined up and got whatever they gave back. And one reporter asked a devotee, what is the spiritual significance that the Hare Krishnas never have matching socks? I thought it was some, like, you know, because every devotee they saw didn't have the same socks. And didn't have proper winter clothes. And they did Harinam all day in New York City in the winter. You know, no gloves, no hat, no socks even. and somehow they did it. Devotees that did it, now they can't imagine how they did it. But they just got empowered, you know, by the holy name. And they collected so much money to build this temple, and then from Juhu came this one. Now Mira Road's building their huge temple, and huge congregations all over India. And the West, we have to beg from India, please help us. We have so many problems. So the world, you know, demographics change and things change, but the absolute truth doesn't change. The fact that Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead doesn't change. We have to remember that. That's why we worship Krishna. That's why we worship Gaur Nitai. Prabhupada made Krishna Balaram and Gaur Nitai so that to show the world there's no difference. So now people are becoming more and more aware of Lord Chaitanya, because, you know, we're spreading it all over the world, and temples of Gaur Nitai are, I don't know how many there are and how many homes are worshipping Jagannath. We have no idea. There's millions and millions of homes where people are worshipping deities in various degrees of regularity, but sometimes in great opulence. You know, hours of bhajan, I've seen some sitting down in front of their altar, you know, nice offerings all the time, because they live far away from everybody. And anywhere, any country you go, Russia, China, Germany, you know, all these places. And bhajan is going on in kirtan, but we need to be out, you know, letting people experience the kirtan of Lord Chaitanya's kirtan. When the devotees came from Navadvip to Puri, and King Pratapa Rudra, he hadn't seen them before, evidently. He was up on the roof, I think with Sarvabhauma, and he was asking him, you know, what he was saying. And he said, "Who are these people? You know, I've never heard a kirtan like this." And there's plenty of kirtans in Puri. There must have been, you know. But he never heard like that. And then he explained, "This is Lord Chaitanya's devotee. It's different. You know, it's connected." So even in Puri, we need to do that. I was in Puri some years ago, and we were staying in one of the Gaudiya Mutt guest house. And every time I went out, everybody would come up and say, "Nitai Gaur, Radhe Shyam." I said, "No, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare." They didn't know that mantra. They had never heard it. And I told these Gaudiya Mutt, "You got to get out." You know, in fact, the leader, he had previously lived in Juhu. And I said, "You got to get out and do Harinam." "Oh no, ISKCON can do that when they come." Now we do it. There's always Harinam known because the Russians are there. Somebody's there. And they're doing Harinam. So now it's becoming known. The Maha Mantra. You know, we have to have people hear it from the Vaishnavas. They can get something hearing from Mayavadis, maybe, if they meet devotees and if they're not too contaminated, you know, by all kinds of other things. If they read Bhagavad Gita Yata Rupa, you know, as it is, the real thing. Our Radhakund Mataji, who distributes books there in Krishna Balaram Temple, she was one of the biggest book distributors in America before she ever came to India. Nobody could refuse her. I went with her a few times, and just completely mind-boggling to watch her. But these are happy books. One time she heard a lecture by Prabhupada, and she just said, "My spiritual master wants everybody to have these books. Please, you've got to take it." Nobody could refuse. But anyway, it's still like that. But she met one guy. He took a Bhagavad Gita. He's an older gentleman. And then he came back a week or two later, and he said he'd been a professor of Bhagavad Gita for 50 years or so. He said, but this is the first time I've ever understood the Bhagavad Gita when I read this one. And many, many people, not so extreme that they're professors and everything, but many, many people in India, they have read different versions of the Bhagavad Gita. A few people in the West have read, there's many translations. But, if they read Prabhupada's Gita, they come to the same conclusion. Now I understand it. So devotees don't accept this argument, you know, I already have it, or I'm not going to read it anyway. Guaranteed they're not going to read it if they don't have it, that's for sure. But if they have it, curiosity will more than likely get them to read it at some time. The super soul will work on them every time they see that book. Why don't you read it, right? You might have heard that one devotee in Russia, now he's a book distribution leader of all of Russia. He was a naval officer and he was doing some kind of yoga, and he heard that some of the men on the boat were Hare Krishnas. So he called them, and they were a little worried because the captain doesn't normally call, you know, the ordinary people. So he asked them about Hare Krishna, and they preached to him, and they gave him Bhagavad Gita. He said they even asked for a donation, which that impressed him, that they had the nerve to ask the captain for a donation. And so he didn't read it. He read the verses. And whenever he met those boys, they would say, did you read it? And he'd say, yes. But then he was kind of feeling guilty that he only read the verses. And then he had a dream, and Prabhupada came and told him in Russian. You can read the purports too, you know. So he read the purports, he quit the Navy, you know, arranged for his family to be taken care of with his pension, and moved in the temple. That's the power of the Prabhupada's purports. So we want to know them, we want to read them, you know, so we can share it when we speak. We can be speaking from that realizations and give it to people in writing. And now, of course, we see that people want the Bhagavad Gita, and devotees think of more and more, you know, amazing ways to give it or sell it or whatever. However we can get it into the hands of the people, onto the bookshelves. And, you know, there's so many people in the world, and this is what they need. They're not going to be satisfied by anything else. We see on the back of the Gita, it talks about this two American writers, Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau. Right? So if you look them up, they said a lot of very nice things, you know, because they read Bhagavad Gita. They never taught me that in school at all. They left the city, they lived in the countryside and meditated and talked about simple living and renunciation. And they actually express, you know, Bhagavad Gita realizations, but they didn't tell us that they read Bhagavad Gita, that they were vegetarian or anything like that. But we did have to read their little bit of their stuff. So they're still quite well known, and they were called the American Transcendentalists. But now in America, even young people, they're looking for Bhagavad Gita, they're asking for it. Otherwise, you know, at the time we started, no one ever heard of it, so they were curious. We didn't get any arguments about, you know, I've already read it, I've already got it, I don't believe in Krishna. They never heard of Krishna before, so they didn't have a chance to not believe in him. So books would go out like quite quickly, you know, and devotees were so enthusiastic. But there's no limit, because the world is just increasing in population all the time, and more people are becoming educated and literate, you know, so there's more and more need to get the books out there, because the Bhagavatam, you know, the regular bookshops are quite everywhere. And their pilgrimages for the crows. I was walking on Juhu Beach, I don't know if we should change the name of it now, but in the island of Bali, I go there quite often, and they have a similar problem. The people in the villages, they throw all their garbage in the rivers, and then it comes up on the beach. So it gets pretty bad in the rainy season. So the Time magazine said they'd change it to Garbage Island. So that it should be called Garbage Beach. It's inconceivable how much garbage, you know, comes up. So the crows, you know, they're everywhere, thousands of crows. You can judge, I think Chanika, somebody said that you judge a wealthy society, there's a lot of crows. If the society is very poor, there won't be any garbage for the crows. You know, they utilize everything. But now there's so much garbage that the crows are... And so if you find a big pile of garbage, you'll find many crows on top of it. You know. So, yet Vyasam Tirtha, the pilgrimage for the crows, is the garbage heap of mundane literature, which is, you know, increasing constantly. More and more people are writing books, you know, and more ways to distribute books, spoken books, electronic books, right? Printed books. New York City in the subway, the ads are for, you can get almost any modern best-selling book in a spoken book, you know, downloaded, spoken by the author. Big, big signboards. Get this one, get this one. Get, you know, so we have to be pushing the Bhagavad Gita. We have to show it to people because they're going to buy what they see, what gets promoted. When they meet devotees, New York City, they'll just say, the businessman, okay, what is it? I'll give you 1 minute. Tell me why I should read it. So if you can talk fast enough, and they'll take it. You got to talk fast, and you got to know what you're talking about, because these guys are smart, you know. But they take them. Okay, how much is it? They don't stop running, you know, walking. They don't, you have to run along with them and talk a mile a minute and show them a few pictures at the same time. People want the books, campuses. They want knowledge. When they see sincerity. So we become empowered by reading the books. This is what we want to encourage everybody. Just coming to the temple, it's important. Offering a flame, offering a flower, you know, getting a water on your head or touching the flame, it's all important. But it's not the all in all, right? That, okay, I went to the temple, I saw the Artik, I touched the flame. That... If we only read the books and preach and you don't do that, you'll get by. But if you only do that, we might keep doing it our whole life, but we're not going to get Krishna prema. We're not going to get to really know Krishna until we hear about Krishna, chant about Krishna, shravanam, kirtanam. Then we'll remember Krishna. Because, it's, you know, we're remembering so many things. Nobody stops remembering even for a moment, right? Mostly remembering the same old thing over and over and over again. For the students, if you're students, you have to, you know, memorize things and then pass the test, and then that's it. If you can forget about it, the rest. But Krishna is not like that, that we want to just pass a test, okay, I know all the leelas of the Vrindavan leelas, I know the names of all the incarnations, and I made it, you know. No, that's not like that. The test is to always remember Krishna. Kirtaniya Sadahari. The devotees are always chanting Satatam Kirtayanto Mam. And that will come automatically by association, by joining in the kirtans, by reading the books, and trying to tell somebody what we've read, you know, share it. You don't have to be scholars, we don't have to be professional reciters. All you have to do is appreciate it and tell people, this, I really like this, this is really good, and I hope you will also read it. It's different than just, you know, all the different Bhagavad reciters or the, you know, different movies about Krishna, right? Like this little Krishna one. It's really beautiful, but it certainly doesn't tell you that Krishna is God or how to worship Krishna. If you read Krishna book at the same time, then very good, but if the kids are just watching that, you know, then he's just another animated hero. There's so many of them, right? Malati Mataji was saying how, you know, she saw Hanuman somewhere, and then another you see Spider-Man. They don't know the difference, because the movies of those superheroes are so incredible. The Indian movies of Krishna, you know, he doesn't look as great as Spider-Man or Thor or how many they got, you know, right? They just keep coming up with another one, another one, another one. We want a hero. Everybody wants a superhero. But Krishna is the original hero, and he's the only hero, really, in the incarnations. Nothing can compare, you know, the Mahabharata, those battles, and, you know, Ramachandra, the among wielders of weapons, I'm Ramachandra. Nothing can compare. But they don't believe it. Especially if they've seen the movies, you know, you really won't believe it. But if they read Krishna book, we will believe it, and then we can understand what it really is. So Prabhupada, you know, he worked hard. The Krishna book was the first book that was really distributed big, big way. Previously, there was Nectar Devotion, teachings of Lord Chaitanya. They were distributed little. But when the Krishna book came out, that was before the unedited Bhagavad Gita that we could actually distribute came out, and the Krishna book got distributed like really big, big way. That's when it really broke open, and people started to know about Krishna. We didn't know anything about Krishna, but we knew the book was really amazing, and the pictures were really amazing. The first Krishna book, volume one, there was two volumes. It had 64 pictures. Prabhupada, you know, gave the artist assignment for which pictures to make, and he held back the publication until all the paintings were ready. The book was ready, but he wanted the 64 pictures. The second volume, which was maybe 60% the size of the first volume, had 36 pictures. And it was big. The book was by inches, 8 by 10, you know, like a big photograph. I don't know, centimeters. Heavy book. But we were selling them like crazy. People were fascinated. They'd never seen such a book. Effulgent book. And, you know, just such amazing pictures. They were not sophisticated art, but they were full of bhakti, and Prabhupada loved them. And the people loved them. Not just children, everybody loved them. Some of it looked like children's art, but, you know, they gave everything. Krishna's leelas, philosophy, you know, everything was there. So it's still there, and we're still, you know, needing to get out, meet people, and bring people to the temple, and give them the temple, the book, give them Krishna. So that's a simple message, but it just keeps coming. Ete chamsa kalapumsa. Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam. Swayam means original. He's the original of all the incarnations. And he doesn't diminish, you know, by incarnating. He still remains the ever-increasingly great Krishna, no matter how many incarnations, right? How many Om Purnamadaha Purnamida Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashish, complete Purnam. Even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains a complete balance. So, you know, you show people that, they'll be bewildered. And they want to know more and more about Krishna. So we need to know about Krishna. So when people want to know more, we can tell them. And they can overcome the you know, conditioning and all the nonsense they've heard, and start becoming devotees like all of you, and wanting to come and offer flame, and wanting to come and, you know, not thinking that what do they say? Work is worship, right? Work is worship. Duty is God. The temples, the factories, the temple, they added on. Not that. That's not. No. If Krishna is everywhere, he's also in the temple. But just like the boss of the company, he may be in many places by his influence, but he's also at home. And if you're his friend and can visit home, that's better. Right? Better than just knowing that he's the boss and I better toe the line here in the factory, otherwise he'll, you know, tell him to let me go. If you can visit his home and or he can visit your home, then all the better. So Krishna is here, he's waiting for everybody to come, and he's willing to reveal himself to anyone who will just engage in devotional service under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, which you have here, and we have many, many available in ISKCON. And everyone, Lord Chaitanya said, everyone become a guru, save your land. How to become a guru? Yare deke, tare deke, Krishna upadesh. Wherever you go and whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. Right? So thank you very much for tolerating. I probably went on, I don't know if I'm here. You're supposed to go over time, right? Radhana Swami always goes over time. That's his trademark. Any questions? Yes, Mataji. You have a microphone?
Thank you very much for a beautiful lecture. My question is, Prabhupada's philosophy says that we should have love for Krishna. Love.
Yeah.
But love is such an emotion or such a feeling you can't induce. It is something very natural. We read, we hear, we do japa, we do everything possible by which we develop an interest to read about Krishna, to hear about Krishna, and to do japa, whatever it is. But what about love? Love cannot be induced in our hearts. How do we do that?
It's what?
Love. How can we develop love? We can develop an interest, you know, about Krishna. The love how we have for our children, you know. Okay, my son is going to office, I have to make his lunch. But that day, I may not come to mandir. But that this means I'm giving more importance to my son than Krishna. How to develop that love which I have for my children?
Practice.
How?
What? Do all those things. Chant regularly. Hear about Krishna. And then naturally, the love is there, but it's covered over. You know, we love many other things. Even I heard one Christian preacher who is quite popular, but he said, you love your children, that's nice, you should love your children. But he said, if you love your children more than you love Jesus, you're not a Christian. So if you love Krishna, you're going to love everyone. But Lord Chaitanya also, when they, you know, he was told, oh, you have so much love, he said, no, if I had really love for Krishna, I couldn't stay in this body as if he had a material body. So the humble devotee will always say, I have no love for Krishna. You know. Because that, but it's natural. But to uncover it fully, then we get a little taste, a little idea. So sometimes we might say, well, I really love chanting japa. Other times they'll say, oh, God, I have to do it again. Again, I got to chant my rounds. I attended so many times. Yuck, you know, I'm tired, right? I got too many other things to do today. The kids are crying, you know, I need money. But we do it, right? And then gradually we develop that taste. But love, you know, Baba, you know, is very advanced, and there's love for Krishna, prema, even there's different stages of that. It's never ending. So the more one has it, the more they'll think, I don't have it. Because the more it becomes revealed, what is Krishna, and how great is Krishna, and how limited we are. A foolish, you know, person, oh, I love Krishna so much, you know. But that love means exclusive love, you know. Like the gopis who give up everything. Leave their home, leave their babies, leave their, you know, whatever they're doing to run off and be with Krishna. But it is there, it is our natural condition. And the process is there to uncover it, which is Vaidhi Bhakti, and doing all these things, hearing about Krishna, worshipping Krishna in whatever way we can, and praying to Krishna, please, you know. Queen Kunti prayed, you know, free me from attachment to my family, but her family was all devotees. Still she wanted to be freed of attachment to her family. And Gange Voga Mudanbati, let my everything flow to Krishna, like the Ganga to the sea. Nothing can stop the Ganga. They build a dam, but if they don't open, it'll break or overflow. The Ganga, you can't stop it from getting to the sea, any river. I just came from Bangkok, and the rivers are coming from all sides, you know, flooding the country like anything. Dams are breaking, and they have to open the dams. And when they open an overloaded dam, then everybody downstream look out, because it's not supposed to come so fast. So they, you know, we moved all our books upstairs, we moved everything, and we still don't know what to do, because they say it's coming, they're trying to divert it, you know, but it's going to come somewhere. And Mayapur, Lord Chaitanya arranged, it didn't flood, always floods, but this year it didn't flood, so the construction went way ahead of schedule. Krishna's mercy. They were rushing to get ready for the flood and thinking they'd have to stop working for some, but didn't flood. It's a special arrangement. But this flood of love of Godhead is spreading, but it's spreading by the Sankirtan movement. And the more you get it, the more you get it. The more we tell people about Krishna, the more we get Krishna. It never empties out that I have to keep Krishna for myself. And I can't tell anybody about it. I can't share this treasure, because then I'll run out. We get more and more. The more we give, the more you get. All right? You believe it? You can tell even your own children. You tell them about Krishna. Read the Krishna books with them. Don't just tell them the stories, but let them hear, and let us hear also. You know, who is Krishna? I have one daughter that, she was 2 years old when we joined, so she's older than most of you, but she's reading her child the Krishna book, and she said, well, it's so wonderful to read all these purports. You know, we never read them, we just heard all the stories and thought we know everything. Yeah, I know that story. I know that story. Oh yeah, Krishna picked up, I know that story, you know. But Prabhupada put all the realizations of the first 9 cantos into the narration of the stories. And we have to not just know the story. Oh yeah, I know that picture, that's Krishna doing this, that's Krishna doing that. You know, this cartoon and Krishna does that. This demon is that demon. But know who is Krishna. You know, why we worship Krishna. What we're going to get from it. So Prabhupada went in a lot of endeavor to get all that accomplished. Get it translated, get it published, get it distributed. unbelievable thing, miraculous. So please, you know, read. Just keep reading, and Krishna in the heart, you know, he says, he reveals everything. Right? What is it, Teshaman? You know, just like the sun, he reveals everything. When the sun comes up, we can see. Walking on the beach in the dark is sometimes, you know, more pleasant, because you can't see the garbage as much. And I don't know where it's coming from. Some of it's coming right up from the ocean, some of it's coming from the people just throwing everything. And they do try to clean it up, but they can't keep up. I thought it's like my mind, you know. This is so full of garbage. And as much as I try to clean it up, but everywhere you look and hear, something new is coming in. So we have to keep the mantra going and keep hearing about Krishna and get the garbage out and make our heart a beautiful, clean place, you know, for Krishna to sit. Get all the garbage out. But Krishna, only Krishna can clean it out. But that's when we chant, Krishna takes over and he cleans it up. He cuts the knots in the heart. All right, is that enough? Too much? Nobody really knows what love, you know. In the material world, it's lust. It's like gold and iron, they're both metal. So this so-called love we have in the material world is not exactly love like love of Krishna. Sometimes something like love is. The gopis had the extreme love. They don't want anything from Krishna. But Krishna gives, and you can't stop Krishna from reciprocating. Any other question? Everybody believes everything. Today's Ekadasi. So at least no grains and beans. And I don't know if this is still, I haven't heard this for many years, but there was some idea that devotees had concocted years ago that Ekadasi was a astrologically inauspicious time. Therefore we should chant more to counteract the inauspicious influences. So on one morning walk in Chicago, 1976, I guess, Tamal Krishnamaraj asked Prabhupada, he said, oh no. He said, it is more auspicious. So whatever you do, you get much more benefit. So you want to chant more. That's why there's some fasting. So theoretically we can chant more, read more, do more service. Whatever service you do on Ekadasi has more benefit than other days. The mother of devotion for those who follow it. So please try to chant more, hear more, do some service. We see a lot of servitors out there making garlands and everything. That's the gopis' work also. The gopis would just wake up and go out and make garlands for Krishna. And always thinking of Krishna and wait for Krishna to come, and he never comes. Just waiting with their garlands, thinking of Krishna so intensely. So we can come to that. That's our natural condition. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Hare Krishna. We would like to thank His Holiness Govindendra Maharaj in a traditional style by loudly chanting three times. Hare Bol.